Welcome to International Dispute Negotiation, your guide to resolving disputes everywhere.
This is Mike McElrath, and this podcast is about different ways of accepting and managing the risks of dispute resolution, presenting them through the eyes of experts from different countries and backgrounds.
So once you've obtained your arbitration award and your judgment, you still haven't got paid. And a lot of people get stuck and they need help with the enforcement.
Jurien Braat is a Geneva-based lawyer who knows something about enforcing arbitration awards in foreign jurisdictions. He's a partner with Omni Bridgeway.
We are a third-party funder for litigation and arbitration, and we assist creditors with the enforcement of legal titles.
Let's say you've just obtained a substantial arbitration award after having invested a great deal of time and cost, and the award debtor is refusing to pay. You've done some homework and you know they have assets in a country that's a signatory to the New York Convention on the Enforcement of Foreign Arbitral Awards. You've read the textbooks or attended a seminar in international arbitration, and you know you should be able to collect on your award as if it were a local court judgment. But then the reality hits. What's the range under which how fast this can go in some countries and how long it takes in others?
From 2 weeks to 4 years.
So it's a huge difference.
Exactly. Well,
in this episode of IDN, we leave behind theory and ideals and enter instead a place where there are, literally, a world of differences in how countries will enforce a foreign award or judgment. We discuss the practical aspects of determining whether and how one can collect across borders, step by step.
The first question is indeed whether the award that we have can be recognized in the other country.
The country
that we want to enforce.
Which would be where they have assets.
Where the debtor
has assets.
Exactly, where we have identified the assets. And then the first question would be, would there be a possibility to make a pre-judgment attachment? That means if you have an arbitration award, you will always have to make it a local, you have to convert it into a local judgment. You would have to obtain an exequatur on that award, because only with a local legal title in that particular jurisdiction, the local bailiff can start making the attachments and foreclose the assets you want to enforce the award against.
Exequatur, it's a recognition.
Yeah, it's a recognition. And in different jurisdictions, they give it different names. So, for instance, in Brazil, I know you call the recognition of a foreign award or foreign judgment, you call it an homologation proceeding. In most civil law jurisdictions, you call it an exequatur proceeding. I think in Canada you call it just a confirmation of the foreign judgment or award.
It's basically the process by which you would convert an international award into something that has the same effect as a local court judgment.
Exactly, because you have to go through a process with your foreign award, with your arbitration award, in a local jurisdiction in order to make it valuable, to in order for that bailiff to go out there or a sheriff to go out there and make the attachment, serve the local judgment on the third party where that holds assets belonging to the award debtor. You have to make it a local.
How long does this procedure typically take? Or a better question, what's the range under which how fast this can go in some countries and how long it takes in others?
From 2 weeks to 4 years.
So it's a huge difference.
Exactly.
Where does it take 2 weeks?
In France.
In Switzerland?
That would take much longer. And there are a few aspects why it would take much longer. For instance, in France, you just the proceeding of recognition of an award would be an ex parte proceeding, which means that the creditor submits his request for recognition of the award to the court, and the court looks at it, and they rubber stamp it, and there's not much about it, and they just say yes, it's recognized. Then the process is that this exequatur, this French exequatur on your award, has to be served on the debtor, and that process will take much longer. Because usually the debtor is not in France, it's in some place. Let's assume it's in Myanmar.
Okay.
The service process will take a very long time.
And the courts will, of course, give you a certain period of time, whether it's 30 days or 90 days. How long is the period to notify?
That is not so. The notification is not so much the question. I think it's only that after. You can prove that after the date of the actual service or the notification, it depends a bit, but it's, let's say, 2 or 3 months period after that notification, the judgment debtor still has the opportunity to appear in court, in the French court, and then starts throwing up or putting forward all kinds of arguments why the exequatur should not have been rendered. So they'll start a sort of nullification proceeding.
Even though it's not a nullification proceeding, it's a proceeding to try to prevent the award from being enforced within the jurisdiction.
That's right.
Can you attach assets in the meantime?
In France, yes.
So assets located in France can be attached even though the debtor is putting up defenses to challenge the award.
Exactly.
Does that change from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, whether or not you can attach or not attach?
It does. Yeah. And for instance, in Canada, you would have to prove that there is a risk for dissipation of assets. You will have to prove that the debtor will deliberately do anything to avoid payment of the award. And so you would have to prove that on the basis of facts that you know about this debtor, that he has behaved like this in the past, and that is very, very difficult to establish. But that again also in Canada it depends from state to state. But coming back to your question, why the recognition proceedings may take, let's say, from 2 weeks to 4 years. For instance, in Switzerland, before the exequatur proceedings could get started, you would first have to serve your award debtor and notify him or her.
Not ex parte, you got to go with, okay.
Exactly. Yeah. So that process takes longer. And then the next element why the process can be delayed is because the opponent shows up and starts defending himself against the recognition of the award.
Are there some jurisdictions where it's so difficult to get an award recognized that you as a business just say I wouldn't be interested even in trying to enforce in that jurisdiction?
I think in general, the rules are more or less the same for the recognition. So that is not so much the issue. For instance, here in Italy, if you obtain a local title, you will have to pay a tax of, I think, 4% on the amount.
It may not be that high, yeah, but I think it may be 2 or 3%. But
yeah.
I forget the amount. There is a registration tax that you
pay
on the award.
So if you are not certain whether you're going to get paid by obtaining a local exequatur in Italy, then you may question yourself: why you would want to pay, you know, if it's a very substantial amount.
You pay that independently of whether you collect.
Yeah.
So I guess that's... so
it's just a tax that you have to pay to the state. And so that... so maybe you would have to pay $500,000 tax on...
An award,
and you still don't know whether you're going to enforce it.
You may get zero. Or,
exactly. Yeah. So that and that, and there's the same mechanism in Germany, where you pay incredible high amounts, court fees or taxes, whatever it's called. But it's basically, you know, you're being as a creditor, you're being frustrated to obtain your rights. Because why would you want to pay? Do you want to front $500,000 if you're not sure whether you're going to get it back?
Get the assets within that jurisdiction,
yeah.
Right? I mean, even the debtor may have some assets, but not all of the assets in that jurisdiction. So if you're paying 4% in Italy, 4% in Germany, 4% in other jurisdictions, you would eventually just pay up the entire award in taxes.
Exactly. Yeah. So that would have been, I mean, if you have to divide 100% by four, then it's going to be a lot of jurisdictions. But
hopefully the creditor, or the debtor, doesn't have assets in 40 jurisdictions or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. You have to go to.
But so,
or 20
so
jurisdictions.
For instance, to find out whether it's worthwhile to do that, what we've done in Germany, what we did is we had an award of 15 million euro, and what we did, we just asked for the recognition of 100,000 or 200,000, and then your court fees are much less. Then you make the attachment after that, and then you find out whether the assets you have attached are very valuable or not so much valuable. And if they're enough to satisfy your award and even the court fees you have to pay, then you subsequently ask for another recognition, but then for the full amount, and then you may want to pay those high court fees because you are sure, you're secured that you're going to get it back.
Now, what once you have paid the fees and you've made these assessments, are there other steps that you take once you begin enforcing in the jurisdiction? In terms of freeing up, going from attachments or seizures of assets to actually having the funds paid to you, is there a further step that you have to take?
Yeah, well usually, let's say, when you attach assets, the debtor is not amused. So usually you don't have to go through the whole proceeding of the enforcement, of the actual foreclosure, that the bailiff receives the money on his bank account and then he pays it onwards to you or your lawyer or the creditor. Usually what happens is that if you manage to attach assets in multiple jurisdictions at the same time, this will wake up your debtor and he will come to the negotiation table and you'll settle a deal.
And I think you've mentioned to me before that is one of the strategies, that sometimes, even though you may have a 10 million, 20 million, or a much larger amount, if you can find small assets in different jurisdictions that you can freeze, that may be enough in your experience to bring some award debtors to the table.
Absolutely. Some assets are so valuable in terms of... maybe not at that point. It may not be 15 million in total or 50 million the value itself, but it has a lot of value to that particular debtor. And so they don't want you and to take it away from them.
In your assessment, in your experience of enforcing arbitration awards in different jurisdictions, what are the best jurisdictions to enforce an international arbitration award?
As a general rule, you will have to choose what we call friendly jurisdiction.
Right.
And a friendly jurisdiction is a system, a legal system that you can trust, you can rely on. I mean, if you go to a place like Congo and you want to attach Congolese assets because you... have a claim against the Congolese state, whether it's Brazzaville or Congo-Kinshasa, but there's a substantial chance that you won't get anywhere because the judges just don't dare to make a decision.
They don't see themselves as being independent of the state.
Exactly.
Okay.
Recently, we were trying to enforce an arbitration award in Turkey against a Turkish company, and one of the factors that played a role, one of the reasons for us to accept a settlement was that we were, although we were winning in the first and second instance, we figured there may be a reason for the Turkish judges to decide in favor of the Turkish company. And that was, let's say, a chance we had to discount in accepting a settlement offer.
The fact that there would be maybe a local favoritism when it comes to actual enforcement of the proceeding.
That's right.
You've identified jurisdictions where there may be assets located. The first question is can you enforce the award through the courts of that jurisdiction, and ideally by being able to get a pre-judgment attachment, by getting an attachment while you've started the recognition proceedings.
That's right, because you first want to secure the assets that are there.
Before they've left the jurisdiction.
Exactly, or even try to find out whether there are assets at all before going through the whole hassle of between 2 weeks and 4 years.
Right.
To after 4 years find out that there's nothing there.
So the mechanics and the timing of enforcement and the orientation of the courts is going to be one of the critical concerns once you've identified assets in different jurisdictions of where
Correct.
You may move. The question of whether or not a prejudgment attachment is an option by making a jurisdiction more attractive. Taxes is one that I think that very few people ever think of, and yet, as you've pointed out, could have an enormous consequence when you have an arbitration award in hand and you realize, oh my gosh, it's going to be really expensive for me to start the process, leaving aside the lawyers and the others who may be involved.
Right.
And then the question, I guess, of whether or not you can foreclose against the assets, actually liquidate what you've seized, may also be a consideration that you would make.
Right.
Is that a
right.
fair summary
yeah.
of the sort of rationale you go through as you're identifying different jurisdictions?
Absolutely.
Anything else?
I guess the most important thing is that you prefer to attach cash. You just want that bank account stuck with cash. And then, so that's an easy process. But if you can't find that, you just have to find other different angles that trigger your debtor to pop up out of the woods and say, I want to pay you.
I want to get to the table. And,
yeah.
and all of these steps that you take, it sounds like at each instance you're looking for settlement opportunities. You're looking for a way to bring the debtor to the table and find
out,
interestingly enough, you're on the, at the end of the process, the enforcement process, but you're looking for settlement opportunities.
That's right. Because the way we work, which we find, let's say, a fair proposal, is that we only receive a remuneration once we're successful.
Once you actually have the cash in hand.
Exactly. So our interests are aligned with the creditor, with our client. And so what we try to achieve is, as fast as possible, the highest possible result.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to International Dispute Negotiation. This podcast is presented by the International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution, CPR. CPR is a membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes excellence and innovation in public and private dispute resolution, providing an international resource for the avoidance, management, and resolution of business disputes. For further information about CPR, or to download archived versions of this podcast, go to www.cpradr.org. Questions about this podcast or the issues discussed can be addressed to idn@cpradr.org. The music of Note Noir is used with permission.